Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. This is Angela Orkin. Thank you for joining us for part two of Bill's interview with Justice Barbara Pariente. In this episode, Justice Pariente will talk about the impacts of trauma on the children we represent and their families, and an idea that she's had in Palm Beach County to do something about it. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Now, you have upcoming in June an event here in Palm Beach County, and while it's local, I wanted to talk about it because I think it could help across the nation and other jurisdictions. You've come up with this idea of funding a position related to trauma. And so why don't you tell a little bit about it and what you hope that this person that our local legal aid will hire can, how they can help these kids.
Each justice, when they retire, is asked what type of retirement ceremony they wanted. And I have always been a huge advocate for legal aid, legal services, representation for those that do not have a voice. And I decided that I would ask our executive director, Bob Burdish, who you and John and Jim have all worked for, if I could have my retirement ceremony in conjunction with what we call our pro bono night, where a lot of money is raised through lawyers in the community just to pay the operating expenses, because the grants don't cover that. And I decided that I would ask that there be a way to raise additional money to fund what we're calling a child trauma specialist. Now, there are Masters of Social Work at Legal Aid, but a master social worker that is specifically trauma informed understands such things as what are very known in the social work community, or should be known, as adverse childhood experiences, ACEs. They are able to understand the effects of domestic violence on the child's development. And so that what we want to get to in Florida is a trauma-responsive court system, but also a trauma-informed decision-making about what is it that is driving that child's behavior. They have all experienced trauma, so they may be acting out in school, and yet we're saying they're bad kids. But no, there are kids that have had some really awful problems, and
the biggest problem is they're out of their home.
They're out of their home. They may be in several homes. They may have been abused sexually,
right,
as before they even are out of the home. They may not even realize the extent of it. So what I thought, instead of asking for funding for another attorney to represent children, that to have this specialist could both work with the children that are your clients at Legal Aid, and could also not counsel the children, but work to develop what are the issues, maybe help you hear the child's voice in a way that, although we think we're great as lawyers, yeah, in initiating dialogue, we're still perhaps more intimidating than the child, and the child isn't being forthright. So it was an idea. I think that I'm excited about it. Will it be the end all or the be all? No, there is no one panacea. But what I know is important, and I believe now the Supreme Court through our steering committee recognizes important, is the role of trauma in the children and families that have come into our legal system. So I would ask anyone that's interested in knowing more about it. There are a lot of resources on the Supreme Court website, but there's a particular one that you could maybe highlight at the end of the podcast.
We can put it in the notes.
That's a toolkit that has a lot of the information, it has the background, and it's something that once you hear about it, that is the role of trauma, you're changed. I'll give you one other anecdote about it. We did training for all the trial judges in Florida this summer at a plenary session to address everyone. And there was a way through a finder that the judges anonymously were asked the questions about there's 10 adverse childhood experiences. If you experience none, okay, you are more likely to be healthy in your older age, you're less likely to suffer from diabetes, stroke, obesity. And as you go up to 6, 7, 8, you have more likely to experience these physical problems. And we had a good percentage of judges, when I say good percent, maybe 20%, that actually had, whether it was 4 or more or 5 or more, and these are our judges now.
Wow, you mean on the ACEs you're talking about?
On the ACEs, yeah. and again, the ACE study, there's wonderful, wonderful research on it, but it has a lot of implications
today. I think when I
today.
Did it, I was high.
Okay. Well, that explains a lot. Well, you said, how come you turned out so normal?
Yeah.
So that's the position that I am promoting. We'll know over the next, if hopefully the fundraising goal will be met. And I don't know if it's unique in the country to call it that particular specialist to work with a children's law office, but if we...
I don't think social workers are unique.
Sure.
They're in a lot of offices. But actually targeting one to trauma, and if I understand it, to assist the attorney in actually talking to
trauma-responsive, trauma-informed
right,
process. How do you interview?
Right, how do you interview?
Right.
That's important.
Right.
I forget about that.
Right,
really
impulsive behavior. You know,
right.
We dealt, you and I, because I try to mentor a particular young woman in high school.
Yeah.
She had to be off the charts in her trauma. The only thing we know for sure is we don't think she's incarcerated, but it was we both were able to interact with her when she was a teenager. But she had been sexually abused. She had been all her trusted adults. Something had happened to them, and we wonder why was she angry? Why was she impulsive? We thought, we're the great saviors. We're here, and we're interested in you. Oh well, thanks a lot. What else are you going to do for me?
Can I ask you a question on that? Did you see the Children Act, the movie?
I did.
You did. And I
read the book first.
Oh, I haven't read the book.
Yeah.
But
it's an easy read.
Yeah, I actually recommend it for the audience. But when I saw the movie, what struck me was the judge. What do they call him in Britain? But
they may have called him magistrate.
The judge. She made a decision for a child, and it wasn't. It ended up not being the decision that should have been made. That's how I saw the movie, and not to give it away, but. I was wondering, it just felt so painful.
It was very painful, but here is the thing, and it would never happen. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's never a never. In that movie, in the book, she, who's very smart, very erudite, allowed herself to become emotionally involved with the child.
Yes.
And you may be able to do that a bit as an advocate, but for the most part, you've got to be very careful to have that separation as a judge, although I do know of at least one situation of a judge here who formed a long-lasting relationship with a child who was in the juvenile system, but that was juvenile delinquency,
right.
And she is now a lawyer today. And
oh, that's right.
Yes, yes, so that was wonderful.
That is wonderful. So I think what you just said, too, is true for lawyers. We represent these clients, and we want to really bond with them. I find that it really creates a high trust level. But at the same time, they are clients.
They're not your friend.
They're not our friends. And I agree. I thought that was the fallacy or the problem in that movie. It bothered me so much, and I thought of all the times that I probably assisted in a way that maybe was wrong or led them. It caused me sleeplessness.
Here's what the deal is with you, Bill, and with any good advocates. If you don't question what you're doing in your representation or in your actions, you would not be able to continue to improve. And so, you know, you could ask me, of your 1,200 opinions, do you look back and say, oh, I shouldn't have decided this? Well, that's not a question for today, but we should, but we still should have enough confidence in our skill set. And again, going back to this, who can help somebody who's well trained in another discipline as a child psychologist, family therapist, but a trauma specialist can really help to inform advocacy for the child and also for an understanding for the judge that he or she might not have had.
Yeah, and I think it also goes to getting these kids out of care as quickly as possible. Because I think as the lawyers understand and as the judges understand more and more and more, and even with particular cases, how quickly we need to move these cases.
Now, this is hard.
You can save these kids.
Well, there is, right.
Saving might be a little strong.
Here's what, the only issue that where I would maybe take issue with it, if you've got a dependency drug court where the underlying issues for those parents are addiction, the judge, those that are involved in the team, believe that parent can be rehabilitated, and understand their addiction, that may take more than a year. So it's just where I would say that's a balancing act there. If you have in your jurisdiction a dependency drug court, which I believe is part of what I call differentiated case management, that if you say to you as a judge at the initial shelter hearing to the parent who is strung out on something, okay, now after this hearing, I want you going down to downtown. You've got to meet with Mr. So-and-so, and you've got
to
get
all the time.
And this parent, the how he or she even got to court.
Yeah.
So what do you look at? You say, no, I want to have these services for this parent right there. How could you? And they don't have transportation.
Right.
So we have these expectations. So I think that's where the voice of the parent's attorney needs to come in.
Right.
To go, hold it a second. This is not realistic, but we do think this is a parent that can complete a case plan and do it in a way that will really allow the parent and child to be reunited.
And with the proper support, they could do that.
With the proper support, the other issue is keeping siblings together.
Right.
So there may be an issue where that's one sibling is one placement, another is the other. If you rush to one and you haven't, if you've inadvertently have sibling separation, that's negative for the children and for the family. So I would, again, I know we want to say that, but other than my docket's too busy, we don't want that to be the reason. We need to get that report in. So not because of reasons that are clogging a docket, but because it's better to make sure. That would be just my caveat.
We've been speaking, I'm sure, over an hour. In putting this all together for the audience, these are primarily children's lawyers representing, as you know, kids in foster care. You've said so much about trauma and how you obviously really care about this population and you want a better place for them. Not to put words in your mouth, but what would you say to these attorneys as like a motivator to get this job done?
I would first of all say thank you. Thank you from somebody who has been a lawyer and a judge for over 45 years. What you are doing in the legal arena could not, in my view, be more important. Yes, you might be in the public defender system and represent somebody that is charged with first-degree murder and they're innocent, and of course that's important, or a civil rights case. But to be able to, as I think I've said, but I want to say it again, help change the trajectory of that child's life to help ensure a better future, nothing in my view could be more important. And I would say, if just to understand this, if I was graduating again in graduated in 1973 from George Washington Law School, if I was graduating then, and there were such, I knew about a dependency system and I knew about children's lawyer, I am sure that would have been a path that I would have taken, because that's how much I believe in what you all are doing.
You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.